Derek, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you doing?
Are you well?
I'm fine. Thanks. Not a bother.
Do you need some assistance? Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do need some assistance. Okay. I wonder if you can help me.
Yeah, by all means.
Now, what it is, I'm having a Independence Day party this day 2 weeks, hopefully when we get independence. And we're going out for a few drinks, me and a few of my mates over here. Well, a few Scottish lads and one English lad as well, but we'll let him tag along anyway.
Of course.
Just for the crack, you know.
Of course. Where are you from originally, Derek? What part of Scotland?
Greenock.
Which is near which city?
I'd be near Glasgow.
More Glasgow.
About half an hour drive.
Magnificent. Okay, love Scotland. I've worked with many Scottish people down through the years, and I don't have a bad word to say about you or your compatriots or anything else like that. But why are you in Ireland if you love your country so much?
Well, I've married a Balbriggan woman, wife Gail, so that's me. I've been here 17 years now.
Whoa,
so.
Where did you meet?
We met where I worked, The Harvest. It's a restaurant, Balbriggan. She was a kitchen porter and I was a chef, and we just met through there, and I think it was her mother-in-law that introduced us, so thanks to the mother-in-law there. So that's me stuck here now.
Great.
What can I do?
You can do nothing else except succumb to the beauty of your extraordinary wife.
Oh yeah, that's for sure anyway, the beauty.
Now listen to me, Derek.
Yeah.
It is my opinion, and I love I've been following the political story and through the papers about Scotland because I love politics. It is my opinion that you haven't a hope of getting your independence. Haven't a hope. I think you're absolutely... listen, I understand why you want it. You're talking to a proper Irish man here, but I don't think you stand a chance in hell.
I'll tell you what, I'll put a bet with you. I'm that sure that we'll get it. If we don't, I'll wear an English flag for the day.
You'll wear a what?
An English flag. I'll put an English flag. I'm that sure we'll get independence. I'll put an English flag on for the day.
You'll wear an English flag, like an English... What about an English soccer or rugby jersey or something?
Yeah, that's anything to do with England, I'll put on.
Okay, what do I do if I lose?
I don't know.
Maybe I have to wear an English jersey as well.
Yeah, well, do you mind? You don't care if you wear an English jersey, but...
You have to think about it. Like if you lose the bet, I think I'll win the bet, so I'm okay. I'm not worried about wearing a jersey. But I think that you're going to lose, so you will have to walk around Balbriggan in an English jersey if you don't get independence.
Yeah, that's no bother. Okay. I'm that confident we'll get independence anyway.
Okay, well, our listeners, 51552, what should I do if I lose this bet and Scotland becomes independent? Now, listen, what are we going to do? You've got the SNP there, you've got Alex Salmond, and women don't seem to be warming to him, and he's the vote, he lost the first debate, he probably won the second with Alistair Darling. So what are we going to do? There's a lot of undecideds.
There is. I mean, I missed the first debate. Now, I've seen the second debate, and I think Alex Salmond, he was more prepared on the money situation and what currency and that, but he definitely won the second debate. Yeah. But, I mean, up to 2 weeks ago, there was, I think I was watching the news, there was 14% or 14 points, the difference between the yes and no vote. Now, I was watching it yesterday, and there's only 6%.
Yeah.
So it's really close. I think somebody said they need a 3% swing for it to go their way, but I think it's going to go right down to the wire.
Well, tell me this. Why do you want Scotland to be independent?
It's more to do with the football. I'm not into politics now. It's more to do with the football and all that. And the way they keep going on about 1966, the English going on about 1960, and you get sick of it. And you get the Scottish fans, football fans, we're the best fans, we're the Irish, we're the best in the world, but they're always going on about, hooligans and hooligans this and the British that, and we've got nothing to do with it. That's the bloody English that caused all the, used to cause all the trouble and that, you know?
So you think you're bringing this whole bid for independence down to soccer?
Yeah, and plus tennis, you've got to say, I mean, Andy Murray, he's British when he's winning, and when he loses, he's back to being bloody Scottish, isn't he?
Well, listen, we always had that problem here with the people like Barry McGuigan. I always use that example. When Barry McGuigan won the belt, he was Barry the Brit, and when he lost it, he was the Irishman, Barry McGuigan.
It's the same as Rory McIlroy as well, you know? You don't know what he is. Is he British or is he Irish?
Oh, no, he's Irish when he's winning stuff, and then he's British when he's acting the maggot.
Yeah, so he's mostly Irish then.
He is? Hey, now you have it. Okay, so you want it to be independent because you're sick of the soccer situation.
Yeah. I'm not into politics and that, you know, but Ah, yeah, there's that reason as well. Plus, if we get independence, I'm burning my passport.
Yeah.
I think somebody said it was... Is it illegal to burn your passport?
Apparently so. Yeah, apparently so. Do you have... In your house, do you live in Balbriggan, Derek?
I do, yeah.
Okay, in your house in Balbriggan, if I was to walk into your house, what would I see that would let me know that you were Scottish? Do you have anything to remind me of?
Yeah, well, you would see... I've got a yes sticker in the front window. They vote yes. And my wife's got the yes sticker in the car. And there's another five people... I've got my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law. They're all driving around Balbriggan with yes stickers. So there's loads of people driving around with yes stickers on their cars. And people are probably looking at them like, are they bloody nuts or something, you know?
Okay, so you're going to have a... In the hope that you win, and you're quite convinced you're going to win your independence, you're going to have a party at the... about the 18th of September?
Yeah, the 18th is a Thursday. That's when the...
The vote.
And the votes open in the morning and close at night. So I'm going to start at night, have a few drinks. I'm going to stay up all night and hopefully celebrate when we get the independence early in the morning.
And to do that, you're going to be making some Scottish food, I presume.
I'm making, I'm making slice rolls. Now, I don't know if you've, have you ever tried slice?
Slice rolls? I don't think, what is it?
It's a square sausage. Ooh. It's a Scottish thing. So I'm going to be making, I'm a chef, so I'm going to be making slice and I'm going to be making Scotch pies. Now, the Scotch pies, they're easy enough to make. I've never actually made them, but it's basically a pastry with a meat filling, like a mince and gravy filling with special seasoning in it. Now, the only problem is I'm looking for the pie dishes that to go in. They're wee individual pies.
Pie dishes.
But, yeah, I can't. I phoned a place in Scotland, but you have to have a business. So I'm just wondering if any of your listeners know where I can get the Scotch pie. They're like tinfoil dishes. They're disposable dishes. It's the same pies. If you ever go to a football match in Scotland and you go up and get a pie in Bovril, it's the same pies they sell at a football match.
Okay, well,
individual pies.
Lads, somebody must know where we can get some of those Scottish pie. They're the foil dishes like you get in a Chinese restaurant or something like that.
Yeah, okay. They're like foil dishes that you can get to cook the pies in. That'd be great.
All right. Right, 51552, if you want to donate this to a Scottish man who's going to watch as his country refuses to vote for independence towards the middle of this month. I'm dying for the vote. You see, I'm fascinated by votes and elections as much as people are about, you know, the FA Cup final or whatever it might be. So I'll be watching this nice and closely. Okay, Derek, they're suggesting what I should do if you get independence and I lose the bet.
I've got a good suggestion.
Go on.
If I'm not confident we'll get independence, if we don't get independence, you know your toy show, if there's two tickets for me and the wife, that's if we don't get it.
Well, there's two tickets safe for me. And then they're also suggesting if you lose, Ryan, you should wear a kilt for the day.
Yeah.
If you lose, Ryan, you should wear a Rangers jersey down Grafton Street at the weekend. Thanks, Eddie. If you lose, Ryan, Ryan should sing God Save the Queen on Sunday before the Tip Kilkenny final.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good.
Or I should have to eat a whole haggis.
Oh, yeah.
No,
I'll
thanks.
Cook it for you. I'll come in and I'll cook it for you.
Well, I appreciate the offer, but I could think of many other things I'd rather eat than haggis. I don't know what the attraction is. Do you like it?
I think it's all right. I mean, I wouldn't go eating it every day, but I mean, as I'm a chef, and now me and my mother drop a few tins over and I cook it for people in me work, and they'd be, oh, that's lovely. Now, I'd kind of roll them in wee balls, put them in breadcrumbs, deep fry them, and put a wee sauce on the side, and they think it's gorgeous. Then you tell them what it is, and they just spit it out.
Okay, yeah. And then once you tell them what it is, it's all in the mind, isn't it, Derek?
Yeah, that's it. It's
a sheep's
blood? It's just a sheep's stomach. It's just intestines and all the gut. It's the same as black and white pudding. Everybody loves black and white pudding.
I don't.
That's what it is, you know?
I don't like it at all. You remind me of my friend Alan Boyd, who I worked with over in London recently for a few years, and he's exactly speaks very, very like you. So I can understand everything you're saying. I feel like I've had crash course in Scottish.
My wife says I'm losing my accent. I mean, she's always saying I can't hear the Scottish accent, you know?
I know. Home store, all kinds of tinfoil dishes. Home store. Well, we need somebody who actually has their hands on them and can say, look, here they are. Have you ever worn a kilt?
Yeah, I'd wear a kilt. Well, saying that, I got a kilt when I first came over here but it's more like a mini skirt. It won't go around my belly.
Oh,
just the belly. I'll have to invest in a new kilt anyway, you know.
You'll have to get one sorted out. Okay, well, maybe the pair of us will have to wear a kilt at some stage if I lose the bet. We'll see what happens. But Derek, we'll be watching with great interest. We'll keep you posted on the pie dishes.
Lovely. I'll keep listening to the show and see if any of the listeners can come up with some ideas.
We'll do our best. It's been good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you as well, Ryan, okay?
And it's going to be fascinating to see if Scotland goes all the way.
I'll be looking forward to Christmas when I get my tickets.
Okay? Yeah, good on you. Talk to you soon, Derek.
Thanks, Ryan.
Bye for now.
Bye.
For the right and for the masters, oh, we come to be kind, to be warm here and after we've been out. But we're back, cause we're graced in these matters and we rise. And we did a little love, but we walk, we make a sign for the master, make a little call. To the right, to the ball, to the mast top, and we fool around now and again. We're looking good, we're just as friends. And this is our heyday, baby, and we're not gonna be afraid to shout, cause we can make our heyday. We lack a little love, but a sign to get a little messed up. Picking up the rules before the chimes, making up minds and making it last us. Cause we live alone and now we're grown, and we know what we're after, and we'll rise. And we fool around now and again. We're looking good, just as friends. And this is our heyday, baby, and we're not gonna be afraid to shine, cause we can make our heyday last forever. And ain't that what it's all. Just as friends. So we have ourselves a break, and when we're done, then we come to our senses, then we'll rise. Oh, then we'll rise. Cause this is our
that's Mick Christopher and the Heyday at 9 minutes to 10 o'clock this Friday morning. Tell the sensitive listeners, as Nick in Cork, to try B vitamin supplements, B12 in particular. It helped me balance the sensitivity out. Best of luck with that. Jill in Cork says, I was a bit like that before, very sensitive. Still am. But what really works for me is I've chosen a theme song. So, a song that makes me feel really good. Makes me feel fabulous on the inside. My theme tune as such. So now when I feel like this, that is to say teary and embarrassed, I play the theme tune in my head, and it gives me confidence and makes me feel great. just at the right moment. As regards standing up for yourself, you have to just practice that. Know and trust in your self-worth. That's a good start. Best of luck. What's the theme song, though? What song is it? I didn't say what, like, is it the A-Team? Are they going, bam, 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 bam. No way am I going to take that assignment. I don't like it. Is that your theme song? What is your theme? Is it the Muppet Show? Is it Manamana? You know, is that what puts you... What is your theme song? You can't just say I have a theme song and it gets me through the night without telling us what it is. Jiminy. God damn it. 51552. Tell the woman who texted in thinking she was overly sensitive to check out a book called The Highly Sensitive Person by Elaine N. Aron. It's a great read, especially for those of us who are simply wired this way and have often spent our whole lives belittling ourselves for not fitting in. More people, both sensitive and not, need to read this book, according to that caller. Daniel, good morning to you.
Hey, doing right.
So are you sensitive or not sensitive, or where were you with you?
I was sensitive. Excuse me, just a bit nervous.
That's all right, you're doing fine.
Certainly, thank you. When you're reading out what your listener was saying there, it kind of struck a nerve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like people being self-conscious or oversensitive, especially sort of... Excuse me.
You're all right. How old are you?
I am 33 now.
You're 33 now. Mm-hmm. And when you were younger and somebody would say, criticise you or say something...
Take it seriously to heart.
Okay. And you get kind of upset.
Very self-conscious, very oversensitive young fellow, so I was.
And what were you... let's try and get to the bottom of it in the sense that... Like, let's say somebody would say something to you. What were you oversensitive to? What were you worried about?
Any criticism at all. Anything at all. So it's... I'd just be a very self-conscious, a very unhappy young fellow, so I was.
Yeah. Were you worried about people's... reaction to what you had to say about something, or
yeah, so you just keep quiet, don't you, when you're in that situation? Just you don't want to give your opinion for fear of being shot down or being made a fool of. You don't want to say it, and just in case, like, I'm sure there's lots of kids like that, and I know there's lots of people like that. They're just so self conscious, and it's just so debilitating. So I just want to tell everybody, sort of like that, like I texted in to you there, to put on a happy face, pretend to be cocky, pretend to be overconfident. And when you realise how happy that makes you feel, how more self-assured you feel like that, then, and you don't really care if somebody comes up to you that you know or on the street and says something negative to you, you think, sure, my opinion's so much worth so much more than yours, so I don't care what you think of me. But you do end up being a happier person because of it. Now, I was saying in the text there that, or to your producer, that even me dad, who, like, he thinks the world of me and the feeling's mutual, he thinks I'm pompous.
Now or then?
Now.
And how would you define pompous?
Just overly sure of myself and very self-confident now compared to what I was when I was a young fella. So I just sort of, when I was maybe 16, I just decided I'd had enough. I was unhappy all the time. So I just decided, to hell with this, I'm better than everybody else, and to hell with them if they think different.
So you put on this facade, was it, this act that said, I am confident?
Yes, exactly what it did.
Okay, so when you went home to bed that night, were you actually confident, or was it just a mask that you took off when you went to bed?
No, it was a mask.
Okay, so you weren't really that confident, were you?
Oh, no, not at all. But the point is that because I pretended for as long as I can remember, it grew on me. So I can quite happily say now that as I'm sat here in my van outside work, that I am a very confident, self-assured person now, and I try to help everybody else who isn't confident be a more confident person. I'm trying to rear my kids to believe that they are the nicest, strongest, best people that they can be, kind of thing, and that anybody else's opinion of them doesn't matter a damn, like.
And you say to the person who wrote in, whose nerves are a bit gone, what would you say?
Just pretend to be super confident. Pretend to be the centre of the world. And some people might think, she's only cocky or whatever, but sure, let them, and she'll be happier in herself, and people will think, look at your one, isn't she full of herself? Let them think that, sure, what does that matter? It's better than her feeling unhappy in herself. She can stay super strong, and then after a while she'll forget that she ever felt self-conscious and oversensitive, and she'll realise that she's a much happier person being a little bit cocky-like.
So the act becomes reality.
Yeah, you forget, you hopefully forget what it felt like to be such a self-conscious little fat kid kind of thing, and you move on with your life.
What about the idea of a theme tune? Do you have a theme tune in your head?
Not so much, no.
Isn't that what?
I just keep my head up and pretend I just say whatever I want to say kind of thing.
Well, I didn't realise that people have theme, like people are texting and saying, I have a theme tune. People have theme tunes to get put them in. Christoph says his one is Indiana Jones theme. In his head, as he's walking down the corridor in the paper factory, he's singing this in his head.
Yeah, fair play to you if it works.
My theme tune is Shaka Khan, I'm Every Woman, says Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Every woman. That's what he does.
I'm liking your ambitions of them, by the way.
You what?
I'm liking your ambitions of them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm a good big fan of that one.
you name that tune. I'm there. I am.
Fair play to you.
But I, but before the late, I actually listen to music in my dressing room. I have a little thing I plug into my phone, and I get the music to kind of get me in the mood for the show.
Fair play, singing into your hairbrush.
Bit of Beatles going on there, and you know. Bit of Sinatra. Gets you going. So you got to think about that, Daniel, next time you're going into a meeting. Have a song in your head and put on your headphones and do it. It could be the 9 o'clock news sig tune. It could be, you know, Superman, something like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't work for me now, but I can understand it would work for some people.
And what's your job these days? What do you work
on? I'm a self-employed builder.
Are you?
Yeah, I do attic conversions for a living. Did read Scott's Attic, by the way.
Hey, now, that's what you should have. You should have that on the side of your van.
Yeah, I should do.
Burns Attic Renovations, quotes, we did root Scots.
There you go. But like that, I couldn't be what I am today. I couldn't be employing five lads and be self-employed if I was still that self-conscious little fat kid.
Okay.
I'm still a heavy fella. but I'm not self-conscious. And yeah. I couldn't go into people's houses and canvas for their business if I wasn't sure of myself and if I wasn't exuding confidence as I do at the moment. Like.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, that's your call is the call we needed to reassure somebody today. So Anna was on to say her theme is Riverdance. God help us. Daniel, have a good day, won't you? And a great weekend.
Thank you, Ryan. You take care.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Bye-bye.
The Nicky Byrne Show on 2FM.
The 1975 were on the show and they were mad for the crack.
Well, everyone's just up for the crack, that's what you call it.
Yes, yes. And it means something different to everyone else.
In Manchester, it definitely does, yeah.
The Nicky Byrne Show.
Weekdays from 11
on 2FM.
Email Ryan now.
Tubbs@rte.ie.
Tubberty on 2FM. Live across Ireland.
This is 2FM News.
It's 10 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Joan Larkin. Post-mortem examinations are due to take place today following the deaths of three members of the same family in County Cork last night. 9-year-old twin brothers Thomas and Paddy O'Driscoll were found stabbed to death at their home in Charleville. The body of their older brother Jonathan was found by the bank of a river in Buttevant. Father Tom Nocton, the curate at the Holy Cross Parish in Charleville, visited the O'Driscoll family home last night.
It's the most unnatural thing really in the world to see a child dead, and you know, to see your own child dead, I'm sure, is just unimaginable. And even for our own community here, the wider community of Charleville, which is a very close-knit, caring community, you know, a shock right through.
Talks are due to take place in Belarus later today to discuss an agreement to end the fighting in eastern Ukraine. Western countries, meanwhile, are preparing to tighten sanctions on Russia over its actions in the region. They're attending a second day of a NATO summit in Newport in Wales. From there, our Europe correspondent, Paul Cunningham.
The European Union and the United States are prepared to impose more sanctions on Russia for its military intervention in eastern Ukraine. The White House says it's already drafted a list of new measures, but will act in coordination with its EU allies. The punitive action could be avoided if peace talks in the Belarus capital Minsk are successful. There, negotiators from Russia, Ukraine and the separatists are trying to agree on a peace deal, which could see a ceasefire beginning today. The Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko told journalists at the NATO summit last night of his careful optimism that a deal could be struck.
A new report for the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, has found around 120 million girls around the world have been raped or sexually assaulted by the age of 20. UNICEF also says 95,000 children and teenagers, most of them in Latin America and the Caribbean, were murdered in 2012 alone. The document draws on data from 190 countries. Susan Bissell is the global head of UNICEF's Child Protection Programme. She says the figures are reliable and, if anything, they underestimate what's really happening to children.
This data is drawn from household surveys, multiple indicator cluster surveys is the name of one of them, demographic and health surveys on the other hand, and other very reliable sources, including some data from WHO. So indeed reliable, and in fact, in our opinion, a gross underestimation of what's really happening to children.
And that's the news on RTE 2FM.
2FM weather.
Sunny intervals in the southeast this morning, otherwise cloudy with outbreaks of rain affecting Ulster and Connacht and spreading slowly southwards, turning heavy in places later. Highest temperatures 16 to 20 degrees.
2FM's entertainment update with RTE 10.
Apple chief executive Tim Cook has given his first interview since a massive breach of iCloud led to nude photos of Jennifer Lawrence and other female celebrities being leaked onto the internet. He told the Wall Street Journal that the company were stepping up their security to prevent other users from falling victim to hackers, and that the increased security measures such as security breach alerts and a stronger insistence on two-factor authentication will be in place later this month. But Mr. Cook said the most important measures to prevent future intrusions might be more human than technological. When I step back from this terrible scenario that happened and say what more we could have done, I think about the awareness piece, he said. I think we have a responsibility to ratchet that up. That's not really an engineering thing. Apple are expected to launch new versions of the iPhone next Tuesday. Usher has confirmed that Drake will feature on his new album, You Are, as well as Nicki Minaj and other stars. The 35-year-old hitmaker is currently working on his 8th studio album, and details of the forthcoming release are slowly coming to light. Nicki Minaj is set to feature on a track, and she won't be the only star from Lil Wayne's Young Money label to appear in the album, as Usher has confirmed he has collaborated with Drake. Speaking to MTV News, he described Drake as an extremely talented man. Finally, Morrissey has announced his first Irish show since 2011 and will be performing at 3 Arena on Monday the 1st of December. Tickets are on sale at 9 a.m. next Friday the 12th of September from Ticketmaster outlets and online at ticketmaster.ie. I'm Amanda Fennelly and I'll have more entertainment news at 11.
Thank you, Amanda. The 3 Arena didn't take long,
didn't take
it?
Long,
the
didn't
body's
it?
Still warm.
I know.
Text
51552.
Call
1850-715-922.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
On 2FM.
4 minutes past the hour of 10 a.m. this Friday morning. I am Irish, living in Glasgow for the past 19 years. The momentum is with, yes, hugely. Tubbs, read up some more. Really? Really? We shall see, because I could have landed myself in a spot of bother there if they win that bloody thing. Yeah, I'm like that builder. I'm unemployed, qualified carpenter, but I haven't got the confidence to price jobs or take on jobs. I'm insecure about myself, and it's nice to hear he came out of it and now has people working for him. That brightens up my day. Isn't that great? One person goes away with the wind in their sails. That's good news today. Ryan, I totally agree with the caller. Pretending to be confident really works. I was cripplingly shy as a young child and as a teenager, but I used this false cockiness to get over it. And now I'm completely over my social anxiety. I never thought that would work. I thought it would be such hard work to be fake that you'd end up kind of confused, but obviously it works and you get through it. You become the creature you reinvent yourself as. My theme tune is Build Me Up Buttercup, says Emma. That's going to do it. That's going to get you in good mood for sure. I'm a maths teacher, and whenever I solve a maths problem, difficult maths problem, I have the Pogues Fiesta running through my head. The Pogues Fiesta running through your head. Must be a very, very tough maths problem. No, because it takes ages. And then by the time he gets it, it goes into the chorus, which we all know. But I just don't have that to hand right now, so I can only give you that. Ryan, just to say, Scottish independence is a democratic issue. We, in the main, are a socialist country and are not represented in a UK government. Our vote does not affect a UK general election. The time is now to vote, create a proper socialist Scotland and save our NHS and public services. If we were better together, we aren't now. Vote aye.
Vote aye. Donkey, what's the matter with you? Vote yes, will you?
No, I don't think Shrek's going to vote yes. I think, actually, Shrek is going to vote yes. Definitely going to vote yes. What am I talking about? We have a prize for you today. We have a prize we'd like to give away. It's a Sony Xperia tablet to celebrate the release of Sex Tape, the movie with Cameron Diaz and Jason Segel. We're giving you the chance to win tickets to the movie and a brand new Sony Xperia tablet. So all this week, we've been giving you the chance to win this daily prize, as we always like to say. Give us this day our daily prize. So today, it being Friday, we want to focus on possibly the most embarrassing things of all, and certainly for my children at least, dads. Oh yes, we are the Phil Dunphys and the Homer Simpsons of the world, and we are laughed at and we are mocked, but above all else, we are loved. The dads. And there's certainly nothing more cringe-inducing than your dad or me trying to be cool in front of your friends and completely making a balls of it. Or what about the budgie smuggler speedos on holidays, or the socks and sandals does your dad sing Let It Go from Frozen in the chip shop after a few drinks, like our Jack did to mortify his poor daughter not so long ago. Oh yes. Or maybe dragging you up to dance the Macarena at your cousin's wedding. Tell us, friends, out your dads, lads, what's the worst thing your dad has done to make you want the ground open and swallow you up, never to return again, unlike rancheros? So we're all friends here. You can let us in. Text 51552 or call 1850 715922 and text us about your dad's disastrous deeds, and you could win yourself a Sony Xperia tablet. Okay? Okay. Take that with Greatest Day at 8 minutes past 10 on 2FM. Delightful to have you with us. It's Friday.
Today this could be the greatest day of all. Before it all ends, before we run out of time, stay close to me, stay close to me. Watch the world come alive tonight, stay close to me. Tonight this could be the greatest. Let's make a new start. The future is ours to find. Can you see it? Can you see it in my eyes? Can you feel it now? Can you hold it in your arms tonight? This could be the greatest day of our lives. Today this could be the greatest day of our lives. Yeah.
That's Barry Garlow and friends. I was thinking John Battles. I can't think of Gary Barlow without thinking of John Battles. Wishing her well today, this Friday morning. Has anyone seen the trailer for the Spelling Bee programme on RTE during the week? It looks like an awful lot of fun. Last June, myself and the team, we hit the road for the finals of the Eastern Spelling Bee with Tubberdee, as we call it. It was a week of nerves, or knives, depending on what part of the world you're from. And there were tears and plenty of cheers. We met an incredible bunch of young guys and girls, smarter than all of us put together, in fairness to them, spelling words, many of which we'd never heard of. Not only was it broadcast live here on 2FM, but following the pupils from day one of the Spelling Bee experience was Bill Whelan and his wonderful crew, who put together a documentary about the whole nail-biting event from A to Z, or A to Z, if you lived on Sesame Street. And The Bee, as it's called, will be shown on RT1 this Sunday at 6:30. I'm very excited about it. Bill's on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Bill Hughes is here.
How are you, Bill? How's it going? Bill Whelan, Jesus, I can't believe it.
Just, we look alike, but I don't have any of his money. I wish I did.
Sorry. Oh, Jesus, my nerves. And do you know what? I know Bill Whelan from seeing him about the play. You're not dissimilar in appearance,
no, we're not,
by the way.
No, we're not.
That was a type of my sincere. But you have full permission to call me Brian for the rest of this interview.
But that's the way. But listen, what a great program we've got.
Well, first of all, the trailer looks fab.
It's gorgeous. Our director, Gary Keane, did such a beautiful job.
Well,
it's gorgeous.
He's good at his job, I have to say.
Top fella.
He's really good, and he made it very easy, very unintrusive and
professional. Well, you come out of it beautifully, I have to say.
Well, that's why I'm praising him, because that takes some skill. Tell us a bit about it. Why did you decide to follow it?
Well, it all came to us through a combination of Eason's and RTE. They approached us, Mind the Gap Films, to see if we were interested in making a... They knew from previous history that we're interested in young people's programming and that we make that sort of stuff. They said, how about coming on board and making a documentary? And between the hoppin' and the throttin', everything got worked out, and it became a very happy situation where putting Gary on the road with Enda and two of our two fantastic Jack Britton as well, fantastic shooting APs.
Yeah.
They just got the best, because when you have a team like Eason's putting a thing like this together, mm-hmm. it's such hard work and people don't realize it.
Yeah.
And all 32 counties were involved, 1,000 schools, you know, with an average of 250 kids in every school. That's 250,000 kids getting involved in a spelling bee that is effectively promoting literacy and a love of reading, which is dear to your heart, I know. So, you know, for us to then make a documentary about it, but to watch these inspirational kids. And, you know, what's heartbreaking for us is, obviously, when you're making a documentary like that, you follow so many stories.
Mm.
And they can't all end up in the documentary. So there were some children that we followed who are not in the documentary. And it's terribly disappointing for them and for us. But that's just... You know, the way it goes. And the stories that are told are just amazing, amazing stories.
The reason I'm so glad that this program has come about is because it there's only so much you can capture on the radio with a competition like this. And one of them is the physical, or I should say the visual aspect of it, which is people can't see the heart. You can literally almost hear the crack of a heartbreak when they get the word wrong, and they go back to the parents and everyone, and the red eyes. And I presume you've captured all that.
We haven't focused too much on the red eyes, because apart from anything else, these wonderful children have to go back to school to their friends, and you know we can't have them open to getting slagged off for being a crybaby.
Fair point.
But so at the same time, we did capture the drama. Just watching, sometimes when they paused in the middle of spelling the word, your heart nearly stopped, our heart nearly stopped, all your listeners' hearts nearly stopped.
Yeah.
And suddenly it all comes together when they get to the end of the word, they say the word again to prove that they've said it, and then the delight on their face when you said correct.
or you know, I find myself trying to sometimes have difficulty saying the word because I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, there were a few of those.
Some bonkers words.
Specificity.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I mean,
whirly gig,
and you can see the parents in the room and the teachers look at each other, going, "Ah, for the love of God, are you serious? Why would you do that to children? That's torturing them."
But it's an amazing hour of telly, and it's absolutely arresting. It's captivating from the get go. You know, we start off with a young Polish girl over in the west of Ireland who came to Ireland with no English whatsoever, and she ends up as our county champion.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of stories are just inspirational.
Yeah, and the Taoiseach was there that day. I remember in Castlebar that morning, and as you say, not a word of English. And there she is. That's a lovely reflection of the modern Ireland we live in.
Yeah.
But also, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that, you know, there's so much focus, and rightly so, on sport, and that's great in school. But we can't lose sight of how important the reading is, because people with texting and WhatsApping, they're losing sight of words. It's now just emoticons.
The level of sensitivity in these children that reading has clearly brought about, their understanding, their self-awareness, their world awareness, that they are the representatives of the next generation. They'll be looking after us when we're old people.
Yeah.
And that fills me with, you know, hope, because these kids are really tuned in.
Good. What do you think people will get from the show, Bill?
I think they'll get that they're, you know, it's okay to encourage your kid to read. It's okay if they're quiet and sitting in the corner with a book. That's not a problem. They don't all have to be out kicking a ball. They don't all have to be out doing, you know, it's important that they're doing physical exercise. But if they decide to get into a corner and read, and reading is so much more important than spending endless, mindless hours playing a stupid game.
Yes.
That they need.
No, he's right. Sorry, somebody's else giving out outside. I'm saying, no, he's right. You're right, Bill. Bill Hughes is correct. You can play a bit of mindless game, but not the whole bloody time, turning us into a nation of automons.
No, you don't have to do any work, really, other than your opposable thumbs. Whereas when you're reading, your imagination gets a chance to take flight.
Yeah.
And that then reflects in your general life. It reflects in the rest of your academic pursuits, that your brain is tuned into the world.
I always say to kids in schools, read books and be polite. That's all you need. And just because there's not enough kids doing either.
Yeah.
So go for it. I was just looking at your back catalogue, Bill. You worked on, because Paddy McKenna was playing last week a version of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And the reason this goes back, because I was tic-tacking on this, the Domino's Fall. I remember that song when it came out first, and I was a kid, and I was going to my granddad's house and seeing the video and Cyndi Lauper, and didn't realise the words were what they were until I heard the remix. And then I realised, you know, Daddy Dear, You're Still Number One, but Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Now I've become the dad.
Yeah.
It, you know, it was so funny going, you know, you're great and everything, but now, it, you know, a girl hits a certain age and now has to go off and have fun. I was thinking about all of that, and the programme I saw it on when I was a kid in my granddad's house was MTUSA.
Yes.
And you were a producer on MTUSA.
I was, yeah.
Do you know how important you were in the lives of a whole generation of Irish men and women?
There are people who tell me that. It's really funny.
Yeah, because, yeah.
And people tell me all sorts of crazy stories about what they got up to on the couch on a Sunday afternoon watching MTUSA, because the parents went out because they wouldn't watch that trash.
Absolutely.
And so the kids were left alone and they were watching MTUSA on the telly. That's 30 years ago, right?
But 30 years ago, that would be right. We didn't have... What, do we have MTV? I can't remember.
No, it was the first music video show in Europe.
Get away.
MTV, Vincent sadly passed away April 87, and MTV Europe only started August 87.
Okay.
So we had four full seasons of MTUSA before MTV came to Europe.
And we were watching videos going, look at that.
Yeah, we had putting that together.
Oh, I bet you.
Yeah.
Because you filmed a lot in the States, didn't you?
Every week. I was over and back on a Sunday. I would fly over, and on Monday we'd recce the locations, and on Tuesday we'd shoot, and on Wednesday I'd fly back, and on Thursday I'd be in the edit, and on Friday we'd compile the playlist for the following week, and on Saturday I'd die, and on Sunday I'd fly back.
Wow. Carlsberg don't do junkets.
That was great.
Oh, that sounds. But I mean, it was a great old show. But I didn't know you were a producer on that until I was kind of looking up, and you did. You were involved in Rapid Roulette as well.
Yeah, Rapid Roulette, and you know, Maxie, the first female presenter of a game show in this country. Other people have said recently that they were, but no, Maxie did it for years.
Let the record show.
Yeah, record show, Maxie was the first.
And you produced and directed Boyzone's videos for Love Me For A Reason, Father and Son, Key To My Life, and So Good.
God, your researcher's really been looking me up. Yes, I did it myself.
I'm guilty
of all those sins. I'm guilty of all those sins, and I think St. Peter might quote some of them back at me when I get to the door and say, get downstairs.
Back in the queue. Downstairs. Maybe not quite hell, but purgatory for sure.
Yeah.
Bill Hughes and Not Whelan, thank you so much for your time today. I'm really excited about this programme.
Well, we're so proud of it. Bernadine, everybody at Mind the Gap Films, we feel this is a really strong piece of work, and we're out there promoting it, and we're so happy. We think it's going to be a great piece of telly on Sunday.
Okay, well, I'll be glued to it. It's on Sunday at 6:30. Everyone, have a tune in and watch it with your family, your kids, and everyone. Get them interested in having a read and try the spelling and do B's at home and all sorts of things. Bill, best of luck with everything. How's the leg?
I'm nearly there.
Good man.
I've promoted. I'm just on a stick now, and I think a couple of weeks. And you know what? I'm back behind the wheel.
Oh, God.
I'm strong enough to drive, and this is after 18 months.
Yeah, you had an off. Was it a fall or you had it?
I had surgery, but then when I was recovering, I had a fall and hit my head on concrete. But listen, I'm out the other end.
Out the other end. Well done. It's great to have you back and back in the game. And thanks. And well done to the crew and everyone behind the programme.
Thanks so much.
All the best, Bill.
Thank you.
That's the great Bill Hughes there, producer, director of Mind the Gap Films. The programme is called The Bee. It follows our the exploits and the journeys of, and I mean that physically, of the children from all over the country in the Spelling Bee last summer, and that's on this Sunday at 6:30 on RT1 Television. Church is there, we think, at 10:25.
Over time, a woman's body changes. Some of these changes we can see, and some we can't, like cells changing in our cervix. And that's why a regular smear test is important, as it can detect precancerous cells. Cervical Check, the National Cervical Screening Programme, provides free smear tests to all women aged 25 to 60. It only takes a few minutes and it could save your life, so there's no reason to put it off. To find out more, visit cervicalcheck.ie or free phone 1800 45 45 55.
This week's offers at Lidl. Indulge in a little luxury at a down-to-earth price. Deluxe marinated duck breast with garlic and pepper, 350 grams for a very tasty $4.49. and pick up a punnet of great value red or black grapes, two for just €3 in store now. Plus, spice up your meal times with our fantastic Vitasia range. Delicious flavours from the Orient. In store Monday, 1st of September. Lidl, choose to live a little.
Follow Ryan on Twitter
at Tubridy2FM.
My theme tune is This Sex is on Fire by the Kings of Leon, says the text. A bit inappropriate for the work environment, but it works. It depends who you're talking to, I suppose. My theme tune is Someday I'll Fly Away. Who sang that? Who sang the Car? Not Carly Simon. Not Shola Amar or some creature. Why am I thinking of someone? No, the original version was by... kind of early 80s, late 70s. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. And those people shouting at the radio going, it's her, it's her. I know, but I... Randy Crawford. Candy Rawford. Well done. Ryan, I'm Anna, Daniel's wife. Oh, you just spoke to about being sensitive. I agree, Daniel is a cocky bastard, but he got over his sensitivity and I'm so proud of him. I love him loads. A few years... he would never have been able to speak. He wouldn't have been able to speak on the radio. P.S. His company is called A Cut Above Construction, so that's worth the plug. Thanks for playing that. Take that song, Greatest Day. We had this as our first dance. Perfect. Totally cheered me up. Happy Friday to you and one of us all, one and all. Now my embarrassing dad stories. For my 11th birthday, says the text, I wanted a party with all my friends from school at my house. So we organized what foods we would have. So chips, cocktails, sausages, typical kids' party foods. So there was a bit of a silence when we were eating after running around all day. We were all a bit worn out, and my dad decided to break the ice and try and crack a joke by shoving two cocktail sausages up his nose. Needless to say, nobody laughed. I was mortified, and and there was an entire plate of sausages left on the table. That is so stupid. You can just see the dad trying to break things up a little bit, you know. I'll throw, you know, kids will love this, two sausages up the nose. That's very fun. That's very Phil Dunphy now, really, isn't it? And everyone going, what is he doing? And he's going, is this not funny? Two sausages up the nose? Okay, so this is for our Sony, why can't I remember the name of that? Sony Xperia. It's an odd name, isn't it, for a thing? Sony Xperia tablet to mark the launch of the sex tape film. We're looking for best dad's embarrassing dad story. Chloe in Kilkenny. My dad mentioned many times how I was his most expensive daughter because when he bought jewelry for us, I cost him more than my three sisters as my fingers, wrists and neck were bigger. Mortifying but funny. We still laugh about it. R.I.P. Mal. Deirdre Brown says, when I was in secondary school, I missed the bus one morning, so dad said he would drop me into school. To my horror, he was dropping me in the cattle lorry because he was going to the mart. I begged him to let me off outside town so I'd walk the rest. No, that wouldn't make me late, so he drove me right up through the square, into the town, and to the gates of the school. Cows mooing, lads from the brothers' school looking at me, and a smell of cow dung wafting. Never felt so mortified in my life. That's a good one. My dad had to be rescued from the sea in the Barbados. Unfortunately, he was wearing black Speedos with pink and yellow lightning bolts across the front, and his belly was hanging over the top. I'm going red with embarrassment now. Claire Fulham. I'm texting on behalf of my daughter. Her dad is so embarrassing. Could tell lots of stories, but one is when she was going into sixth class, the school moved to a brand new building. There was still a bit of building work going on, and she was over with her friends when her dad picked up an orange builder's cone and from the other playground shouted down it saying, "Bing bong cut, girl's name here. Please go to her class." All the girls were not laughing, but I could see her glowing. It's brilliant. It's brilliant because the other girls generally find the messing kind of fun, but the daughter finds it absolutely humiliating, unless the other girls are just being polite. My husband would always shout out, "Well," to random strangers, or say things like, "Well, flathead," to people jokingly. And my kids used to always be mortified. He embarrassed them daily. He could say anything, says Maureen Delaney. Lynn in Cork. Lynn says, I'm the youngest child in my family to three older brothers, now age 34. At a certain age in my life, my special auntie. Is this a thing? A special auntie, brackets, period. Is that what you call your period? A special auntie? My special auntie. Is that the thing? Do girls do that? Maybe they have names for it, but special auntie arrived. To my utter embarrassment, my father decided to congratulate me. Welcome to womanhood in front of the entire family. As if I wasn't traumatized enough at the age of 12, to my new special auntie arriving. He continued to tell me about how life would never be the same for me. I can still picture my three older brothers looking at me, horrified. Of course you're horrified. These guys are in the Oh, what time is it? Oh, better take a break. No, I'll take a break. Come back with a bit. There's a band that I haven't heard from for ages, and they're in the papers. Obviously, have a new album out, but I want to play a song from a few years ago.
Only Vodafone Home gives you unlimited fibre broadband. It also includes streaming horror movies through the night, plus unlimited landline calls, even to mobiles.
Hello?
I'm watching you.
You are so dead.
Giving endless opportunities for little brothers to prank their sisters. All for only €60 a month. Search Vodafone Home online. Vodafone. Power to you. 18-month contract and fair usage applies. See Vodafone.ie.
Text Ryan now.
51552.
Tubridy on 2FM.
Yes, the magic numbers. That's the man I was talking. I haven't played this for a long, long time, but I've decided to pluck it out of obscurity for all of our benefits. It's called Forever Lost. I hope you like it, because I do.
Darling, what you going to now? Now that you know it seems it all went wrong.
I think that's a brilliant song. That's a gorgeous piece of music. That is, it's an old, it's supposed to be about eight years old, maybe thereabouts. Magic Numbers, Forever Lost, at 24 minutes to 11 o'clock this Friday morning. It's the dream family holiday, a trip to Florida. Not only is Disney World a major attraction, but SeaWorld is one too. Many of you have been there. If you have, we'd love to hear from you. 51552, how was it for you? But while Disney World remains the happiest place on earth, as they say, SeaWorld has been hit with a barrage of criticism and bad publicity over the orcas or killer whales in its parks, and its profits have fallen $42 million. That's a lot of money. $42 million below Wall Street expectations. And those playing the blame game are pointing the finger at the documentary Blackfish. We talked about it at length on this program about a year ago. This program documentary attacked SeaWorld for the way it keeps orcas, and indeed for the death of one of its trainers who was killed by an orca there. So few animal care workers have been willing to talk in depth and on the record. But Jim Horton, who spent 16 years working at marine parks, including SeaWorld Orlando, is on the line from Hawaii. Very good morning to you, Jim. Thanks for taking our call this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Maybe let's get a bit of your background, if you don't mind. You might tell us your experience in the marine world and working with orcas or killer whales, as we know them here.
Yeah, sure. You know, I began working with SeaWorld when I was about 21 years old. They had a small shark research institute down in the Florida Keys. I spent a few years there. When that facility closed down, I moved to the SeaWorld of Florida Park, where I worked in the animal care beached animal rescue team for about 10 or 11 years there. And then after that, I moved off for a while, took a job on a private yacht for a little bit, and then I came back and worked at SeaWorld again and also at a veterinarian hospital at the same time. And then I moved on, worked with Keiko, Free Willy Keiko, in Iceland. And I did that for a few years. And then after that, a group of us got together and decided to keep trying to work with wild killer whales or rescues. And we actually went to Seattle and rescued the an orphan killer whale named Springer. First time that had ever been done, and we kept her for about a month and actually reunited her back with her family. I also worked in Canada with an attempt to do the same thing with another orphan killer whale named Luna. But unfortunately, the politics kind of got involved in that, and we were very close to reuniting that whale back with its family as well. Before it was killed by a tugboat. And so, yeah, I've done some work with the wild killer whales, done a lot of research out in the field, and also a lot of, you know, work at SeaWorld behind the scenes there.
And if we talk about SeaWorld and the documentary Blackfish, let's talk about, for example, you working there. Did you ever feel uncomfortable with the way the animals were treated? Did you ever feel that this was kind of against the natural order of things?
No, I don't think so. And again, I mean, I've got to think over a period of a lot of years. You know, there are so many different moments there. But first of all, I do want to explain there's some differences there. The gentleman that you saw on Blackfish, the folks in the movie, or the animal training department, those are the people you see in the shows for the guests and whatnot. And I worked for the animal care department, which is a big group of people that work behind the scenes, and we were primarily responsible for the health and the maintenance of the animals and transporting them and also rescue and rehab. So, you know, I got to see a bit of a different perspective than I think the people that discussed the movie in the movie Blackfish. So, you know, I didn't really ever see anything that was entirely wrong or bad, in my opinion, no. I mean, at that time, I was a young kid that had the greatest job in the world. So.
Sure, sure. And but yet the Blackfish focused on the likes of Tilikum, the one of the most famous killer whales of them all, who featured in the program for all the wrong reasons, because it could be argued that Tilikum was responsible for the death of, is it Don Branshaw? You would have been in and around that. What struck you about that?
You know, I was familiar with Tilikum. I had actually been sent to Canada by SeaWorld prior to him coming to SeaWorld, and I had gotten there just just after the tragic death of that trainer out there, and I spent a lot of nights watching Tillicum just being his natural self, just being himself and not during the shows. You know, and then when he came to Orlando, it seemed like everything was okay with him. You know, I don't think there was any incidents that I had heard about. But, of course, yeah, he did have that history, you know, of drowning someone. But, you know, I think in Canada, you know, the story that I got when I got out there was that it wasn't just him, that all three of the whales were involved in that process. So, you know, at that time, I don't think we believed that it was just him that was, you know, a danger, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course. Could you tell us a little bit about Daniel Dukes? Who was he and what happened to him?
Yeah, that was really a strange incident, and you know, when that occurred, I believe I was working about 4 o'clock in the morning that day, and I was making my rounds in the morning with another coworker in the water quality department, and you know, it was still dark out, but there was a young ops kid, operations kid, that just came running over and said, "Hey, there's something in the water with the whale." I don't think he even realized what it was, and. And the last thing that we had thought would be a human. You know, Jack and I, we walked down to the underwater viewing there to the pool where Tillicum was. And he was the only whale in the pool at the time. And sure enough, there was Tillicum, and he was really just making nice, slow circles around the surface of the pool. And that gentleman was basically draped over his dorsal fin. There was just, you know, it was just a real calm, eerie moment at that point. And then we got on the radio and called security, and the rest is history. I did see them remove him from Tillicum. It seemed to occur with very little fanfare. They just asked Tillicum over to another pool where there's a false bottom, and raised up the false bottom and pulled him off of Tillicum's back, and that was the end of that.
And what had Tillicum done to this man?
Well, I don't think there was much done as was depicted in Blackfish. You know, from what I had saw, there were red marks, most likely from Tillicum's teeth, around the genital area of this guy. But I really didn't see anything else. Mm. However, you know, the following morning, I did scuba dive in that particular pool. And, you know, there were lots of pieces of this guy's hair along the bottom of the pool. So I would imagine that Tillicum played with him for a bit. You know, although that water's pretty cold, I don't think that the gentleman would have lasted very long without a wetsuit on.
Hmm. So we have the trainer, Don, killed by Tillicum, and we have the homeless man, Daniel Dukes, killed by Tillicum. Are we not learning anything here? Is there not a sense that, I think, have we lost him? Yeah, I think we might have. It just, sorry, we have, the line just dropped out there, Jim Horton. What the point I was going to say to him was, what, you know, isn't it obvious that these animals shouldn't, clearly, or some of them at least, shouldn't be where they are if they're a threat to humans? But I'll ask him a question when he comes back. We'll take some music. We were in Florida in May, says the text. We found SeaWorld, a lot of walking around and not to see. I didn't like the way the animals were locked up. You would see more in Dublin Zoo than in SeaWorld. And that's what some people were saying. Jim, you're back on the line. I was just putting the question to you that, you know, with two dead people and this whale with clearly an appetite for a certain amount of destruction, as is his natural world, is it not the case that he simply shouldn't be there?
Well, you know, I guess, you know, you could say that, and I could clearly understand that case. But my question would be then, where would he be? You know,
maybe in the sea with his natural creatures.
Well, I totally agree with that, and you know, I'd be the first one to jump on the plane and go there and help him return to the sea. But it's such a difficult endeavor. That's a very, very difficult thing to do, and we learned that with Keiko. But we also learned that it can be an easy thing to do, such as with the case with Springer, the killer whale. But the first thing that you've got to do is you've got to locate this animal's family. You can't just dump them in the wild on their own and hope that they'll make it, because most likely he'll probably die.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, you've got to do your preliminary research in advance. You've got to locate its pod, which would be very difficult to do, although you could do it with some DNA testing. And then you've got to train the animal to be a wild whale again. You've got to train them to hunt.
Well, see, that makes tremendous sense. But I suppose the thing with these sea parks, what strikes me is that was a whale ever meant by, you know, by nature ever meant to jump through hoops or to, you know, climb up in the air and do a dance for people whooping and hollering in the same way was a dolphin ever really meant and built to jump through a hoop and in reward for fish? In other words, you as a lover of nature and as a lover of these animals, do you think that these places should, quite simply, the animals shouldn't be in the first place, let alone having to find their pod to return them? In other words, should they be closed down, really?
Sure, and I understand that question, Ryan. But you know, I truly think there is some need, you know, for these type of facilities. Mm. Well, making them jump through hoops and everything is obviously it's similar to their natural behavior, some of it. But you've got to keep these guys exercised for one thing, because they are really lean, mean swimming machines, and you can't just let them sit around and float with boredom. But, you know, the way that our world's oceans are going and the way that, you know, society is polluting our oceans and you're seeing animals, beach whales and all this washing up on the shore, you know, who's going to take care of these guys? Who's going to take care of these animals in the future? You know, I think you've got to have some level of commitment from someone that's going to, you know, rescue these animals. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, end up with people euthanizing them left and right whenever you have these things wash up on the beach. And,
there's two schools of thought by the sounds of it, Jim. There's a Darwinism, which says every whale for himself, out he goes into the natural world, and good luck with that. And then there seems to be what you're advocating here is a sort of a protectionism, which is some of them should be taken from the sea and brought into these parks as protected species.
Yes, and I do feel that way, and you know, I can give you one example, like the which is pretty unique to just the SeaWorld of Florida park, but I'm referring to the Florida manatees, which were nearly extinct when I first started working with SeaWorld in the 80s. I think there was only 3,000 of them left, and you know, SeaWorld really rescued a lot of them, released a lot of them, and they're actually making a comeback in the state of Florida, to the point where they're fighting to take them off the endangered species list. So, you know, I think there has to be a need to at least showcase some of these animals so people can see them and love them. I don't necessarily agree with the shows and the jumping through hoops and all of that. I think, you know, again, there has to be a way to keep them exercised. But I think if you just eliminate them altogether, you know, I think they'll be forgotten.
Did Tillicum go kind of mentally deranged by virtue of the fact that here was a killer whale slash orca the size of a, you know, a small tank stuck in a pond that was utterly inappropriate for a creature his size, and therefore there was the suggestion being, looks like putting a man in a cell. No one's going to survive mentally intact from that amount of incarceration. Is there any weight to that argument, or am I talking from far deep into the armchair?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I don't think anyone can ever really know. I've seen some whales and dolphins, and some of them were pretty loony, some of them were pretty mean, others were nice and beautiful. But if you you know, if you want to compare, you know, Tillicum's life to that theory that he was deranged and everything, then I don't understand why we've never seen that in any of the other killer whales. Although there has been, you know, some aggression out of them, and I've seen aggression out of just about every marine mammal known to man. Mm. But, you know, how can we tell? How do we know that he's deranged? And you know, there's, you know, the gap in time between his aggressive behavior was about 20 years, where I've seen other animals that, you know, on a much quicker basis can be aggressive as well. Is it Meanies Deranged? I don't know.
A text says, my family and I are just back from a week from Orlando, where we went to SeaWorld. There were no protests. We love it. It is our third or fourth time there. We go to see the behind the scenes. There are lots of staff working with the dolphins and they seem happy and don't seem pressurized. The last 2 years, there are no trainers who get in with the orcas, as one trainer was killed one of the years. My daughter wants to be a zoologist and she has epilepsy and they are so good. They give her a fast pass and it really inspires her when she sees how well the animals are treated. So there's one plus. One negative says from Anna and Claire says, all people should stay away from SeaWorld. Just look at the stats. SeaWorld steal baby orcas from the wild to perform for humans. Same as circuses. It's wrong and unethical and against nature. Animals are not for profit. They are wild beings and belong in the wild.
Right. Right. And, you know, and that's the very reason why, you know, Ryan, it's one of the reasons why I've been motivated to write a book, because I think that people are just so misinformed right now. And there just seems to be two extreme sides to this debate. And, you know, everybody knows that SeaWorld doesn't collect killer whales. They haven't collected killer whales in 40 years. You know, I think the animals are well cared for. What people don't realize is that there are a lot of very, very substandard facilities all over this world in other parts of the countries that, you know, make SeaWorld look like the Hilton, you know, and I've been to them. I've been to these other countries and seen these facilities and they're terrible, but you don't hear anybody speaking out about that.
Well,
you know?
Well, that's where your book no doubt will come in, Jim. We might even talk to you when it comes out. So good luck with the writing of it. And thank you for your time today. A pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you too. Have a great day.
Same to you. Thank you, Jim. Jim Horton is joining us there from Honolulu in Hawaii, of all places in the United States. Brilliant.